Hey, as you're getting your summer kicked off, let me bring up an idea to you. You know, for years, Dawn and I, as we were church planting, we found ourselves a lot of times in the cold because nobody wants to go plant a church in the cold. And but one of the places where we ministered was in Portage La Prairie, Manitoba, Canada. So here's your challenge. Find that on a map. Here's the real challenge was that, you know, during the winters, oftentimes it was like minus 60, you know, I mean, it was really cold. And so there wasn't a whole lot to do outside except freeze. So you would stay inside. And so one of the things that we would talk about there was, what are you going to do with your winter? And people would get some great books. They would plan, you know, dinner times to get together and have, you know, communion with one another, to spend time with one another. But it was always a season of thinking intentionally about growing in our relationship with the Lord. And so I was thinking the other day, you know, people were talking about, gosh, the summer's here. You know how it is in Florida. It's humid. It's hot. You can't hardly do anything outside. And I thought, wow, we could have a Canadian winter or Florida summer. And you could spend some time, find those books that would meet, you know, really meaningful to help you spend some time growing in your relationship with the Lord. Be intentional about inviting people over, especially if you have air conditioning or a pool or something like that. You say, hey, I've got a great idea. Come over and sit in the air conditioning with us and we can, you know, talk and get to know one another and build one another up. Maybe even, you know, go to a small group together. It'd be great. And so let me encourage you to use your summer as a summer of growth in the Lord. Well, this morning, we're going to continue our series. Actually, we're wrapping up our series in Deuteronomy. And next week, we'll be talking about the Father Heart of God. And then we'll be starting the week after that in our new series in Corinthians, As We Wait. I'm looking forward to sharing that with you and looking into the book of 1 Corinthians. But as we're wrapping up here, you know, Moses has been speaking to the people of God. There's 40 sermons in the book of Deuteronomy where it's his last chance to tell them one more time the things that God has said about the law, things he said about their relationship with him. And then they are transitioning over and Joshua is going to be taking the reins. You know, in the life of every ministry, of every church, of every organization, there are transitions over time. Some of those transitions are just the reality that you and I are changing all the time. We are becoming. And so there are things that work in our personality. There are things that work in our society and our influences in our life, the books we read, the people that we encounter, that there is constant change. In fact, the only thing that is guaranteed, you know, is one, that God is on the throne, and second, that change is going to happen. It's just a question of what that change will be, when it's going to happen, how it's going to happen. And so we are constantly inundated with change, with things that are taking place around us. And that's even more so when we're talking about leadership in an organization. When there are different leaders, they bring in their different experiences, their different spiritual gifts. Of course, I recognize even in the different places where I have pastored, it has been each unique, even though I was the lead pastor, even though I might have founded the church, that because I was changing over time, because of the people I was interacting with, a different city, etc., that every place has its unique experience, its gifts, its talents that create a different atmosphere. Things are constantly in flux. And here today in our text, Moses, as he's preparing for succession, God has called Joshua to lead God's people into the promised land. And here's the thing that we realize in this context, looking at the previous chapters, even looking at some subtle things that Moses is saying here, is that Moses is really not all that happy about it. Now, he's 120 years old. He says that he's 120 years old that day. I don't know if he meant it was his birthday and he was bummed out because this was his birthday present. But I think it was just simply he was saying, look, I'm 120 years old and I'm just, you know, I've been the leader of God's people for all this time, and he's struggling with some of these things. He's not all that happy about God's decision. He knows that it's God, and he loves Joshua. Now, Joshua, you know, Joshua is just 80 years old. He's just a young punk, you know, doesn't know what he's doing yet, obviously. And so Moses is a little worried about handing the reins to him at only 80 years old, I guess, is part of it. And there's other people who are excited about Joshua taking over. You know, now we get the young guy to change, you know, or something like that. Well, anyhow, listen, one of the things that we know is that in the course of things changing, whether it's out in society or if it's in a church, in a ministry or whatever else, is that perception has more to do with that change than anything else. How we respond, whether or not we believe that God is in charge. Do we trust God? Are we resisting the change? Do we believe that it's not God? And why don't we believe it's God? But one of the things that's interesting is these groups that will study different churches about how they go through change, what groups make it well through the change, what churches have trouble through change, is that it always comes down to this perception about whether or not it's God. Do they believe that God is in charge? Do they believe that God is the one who is behind the changes? And it really has very little to do with the actual events or even the people. In other words, you can take those same people, same events, put them in another situation, and the people will go, oh yeah, that's clearly God. Now, why was it God there and it's not God here? And it has to do with our perception about whether people are just following formulas, whether or not they are listening to the Lord, whether we like those changes that are happening, really, actually, probably have more to do with whether or not we believe it's God or whether we don't think it's God. Now, in this case, it was clearly God. God is orchestrating this. We're going to take a look at these things and see this. But one of the things that we recognize in all this is even as they know clearly, even as they see succinctly that it's God, that the struggle they have in facing these changes. So let's take a look here. Deuteronomy chapter 31, beginning in verse 1. I'm going to be reading from the English Standard Version. Please follow along in whatever translation that you have in your lap. That one in your lap is my favorite one. And if you're using a digital device, an iPad or something, would you please set that to silent for everyone around you? Deuteronomy chapter 31. So Moses continued to speak these words to all of Israel. And he said to them, I am 120 years old today. I'm no longer able to go out and come in. And the Lord has said to me, you shall not go over to the Jordan. And the Lord your God himself will go over before you. He will destroy these nations before you so that you shall dispose that you'll depose them. And Joshua will go over at your head as the Lord has spoken. And the Lord will do to them as he did to Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorites, and to their land. And when he destroyed them, and the Lord will give them over to you, and you shall do to them according to the whole commandment that I have commanded you. Be strong and courageous. Do not fear or be in dread of them, for it is the Lord your God who goes with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. Then Moses summons Joshua and says to him in the sight of all of Israel, be strong and courageous. You shall go with the people into this land that the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them, and you shall put them in possession of it. It is the Lord who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. Do not fear or be dismayed. Then Moses wrote this law and he gave it to the priests, the sons of the Levi who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord and all the elders of Israel. And Moses commanded them, at the end of every 7 years, at the set time in the year of release, at the Feast of Booths, when all Israel shall come to appear before the Lord your God at the place that he will choose, you shall read this law before all of Israel in their hearing. Assemble the people, men, women, little ones, the sojourners within your towns, that they may hear and learn to fear the Lord your God and be careful to do all the words of the law, that their children, who have not known it, may hear and learn to fear the Lord your God as long as you live in the land that you are going over the Jordan to possess. And then Yahweh said to Moses, behold, the days approach when you must die. Call Joshua and present yourselves in the tent of meeting that I may commission him. And Moses and Joshua went and presented themselves in the tent of meeting. And the Lord appeared in the tent in a pillar of cloud. And the pillar of cloud stood over the entrance of the tent. And Yahweh said to Moses, behold, you are about to lie down with your fathers. This people then will rise and they will whore after foreign gods among them in the land that they are entering. And they will forsake me and break my covenant that I have made with them. And then my anger will kindle against them in that day, and I will forsake them and hide my face from them, and they will be devoured, and many evils and troubles will come upon them. So they will say in that day, why have these evils come upon us? Because our God is not among us? And I will surely hide my face in that day because of all the evil they've done, because they've turned to other gods. Now therefore, then write this song and teach it to the people of Israel and put it in their mouths, that this song may be a witness for me against the people of Israel. For when I brought them into this land flowing with milk and honey, which I swore to their fathers that they will have eaten and are full and have grown fat, and they will turn to other gods and serve them and despise me and break my covenant, and then many evils and troubles will come upon them. This song will confront them as a witness, for it shall live unforgotten in the mouths of their offspring. For I know what they are inclined to do even today. Even before I've even brought them into the land I swore to them to give. So Moses wrote this song that same day and taught it to the people of Israel. And then the Lord commissioned Joshua, the son of Nun, and said, "Be strong and courageous, for you shall bring the people of Israel into the land I swore to give them, and I will be with you." And when Moses had finished writing these words of the law in the book to the very end, and Moses commanded the Levites who carried the Ark of the Covenant of Yahweh, "Take this book of the law and put it inside of the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, that it may be therefore a witness against you. For I know how rebellious and stubborn you are. Behold, even today, while I am yet alive with you, you've been rebellious against the Lord. How much more after my death? Assemble to me all the elders of your tribes and your officers, that I may speak these words in their ears and call heaven and earth to witness against them. For I know that after my death you will surely act corruptly and turn aside from the way that I have commanded you. And in the days to come, evil will befall you because you have done what is evil on the side of the Lord, provoking him to anger through the work of your hands." Blessed be the reading of God's holy word. So as we open, Moses is speaking quite confidently to Israel about inheriting the land and about it, that it is God that goes before them. He's confident of those things. He says that it's Yahweh who is and was God through all of their situations. He was their protector. It was all about Yahweh. This is what he says. And yet, as we look at these chapters surrounding and we look at the context of even some of the things that he begins to say to the people, what we recognize is that Moses' problem is that even though with his mind is in agreement, even though he knows and believes these things, on the other hand, he doesn't necessarily like what God has decided. Have you ever been there? When God does something or moves in a way in such that you know that it's the hand of God, you know God is behind it, you know God is doing it, but it's not what you like. And then you find yourself at odds with the very thing that you know is God, that God is doing it, but you just don't like what he's doing. Maybe it's because it's not the way you wanted it to turn out, and you had another plan, and God didn't think that your plan was best. And so maybe you don't like it because of that. Or maybe it's because of who God has put in charge. Maybe you didn't particularly like that person or whatever, and God has now suddenly raised them up, and you go, "Gosh, I didn't want that to happen." Or maybe God is at work revealing something, and it's going to be a difficult time or situation. And so God is doing it, but we don't like it. And that's kind of where Moses is at. Moses is 120 years old. You know, you're thinking to yourself, probably at some point, you got to come to this realization that, you know, it's time to hand off the torch. But Moses isn't really wanting to. He doesn't, it is nothing in him. In fact, when we read the previous chapter, you know, we realize that Moses is even kind of blaming Israel for the fact that he has to turn over the reins. Forget the fact that he's 120. He's still feeling like, you know, it's kind of everybody else's fault. And he says that. He kind of says to them, "You know, if you guys had just been more obedient, now look what's happened to me, and I don't even get to go in the promised land." And he's kind of blaming everybody else. He's projecting. It's not what good leaders should do, but sometimes they do when they're in their weaknesses and their failings. They're human beings. You know, here's one of the things I found out is that no matter how great a leader is, no matter how gifted they are, no matter how called they are, that they are still just human beings. They are still flawed. They still have their weaknesses. In this case, Moses, even though while he was doing a great job of leading the people of Israel, there was a point in which he was very frustrated with them, and he picked up his staff, and he was supposed to strike the rock and bring forth water for the people and say, "Shall the Lord bring forth water from this dry and barren land? Shall he bring it forth from the rock?" To make the point that God can bring the water from anywhere. But in his anger and his frustration, he struck the rock and he said, "Shall I bring forth water for you?" And the Lord called him up on it and said, "No, no, it is never you who provide for the people of God. That's my job." You know, one of the things that I know in leadership is this, that there's things you don't touch. You don't touch the glory, you don't touch the gold, and you don't touch the girls, or maybe girls and guys, you know, welcome to the 21st century. But anyhow, just regardless of whatever it is, listen, you don't touch the gold, you don't touch the glory, you don't touch the girls. There's things you don't touch. There are things that belong to God. And whenever leaders step into that realm, when they began to claim the things of God as their own, when they began to touch the things that belong to God, then that immediately discredits their leadership and causes them to go into a tailspin. It negatively impacts the people of God. It's one of the things that people in leadership always have to be on their guard to not touch those things. And when they do, it disrupts their ability to lead, most likely disqualifies them for leadership. In this case, for Moses, it meant that he would never enter the promised land because he touched the glory of the Lord. He claimed it as his own. Now he's in this situation where he is faced with these things and he's grumbling, he's complaining, he's finding fault with the people. Even though he's been a good leader overall, that these things are really kind of overshadowing his last of his days. And now as he's having to turn things over to Joshua, Joshua whom he loves, Joshua whom he has helped to raise up, Joshua who's been his right-hand man for a long time, you would think it would be easy, but even there, that his humanity comes to the forefront. He doesn't like God's decision, so it doesn't matter that it's someone he likes. It doesn't matter that it's clearly the Lord. He still doesn't want it to happen. Do you ever struggle with the things that God does in your life? Things you may not like, things you may not want to come to pass. Even when you know it's God, that's where Moses is. And even good leaders can get in the way, either by doing things that they shouldn't do, or even sometimes it's just in the way that they betray what's really going on in their own heart. You know, before I came to Christ, I was a really good liar. Can I just tell you, whenever I was not walking with the Lord, I could tell a story like nobody's business. You know, I'm Irish, so, you know, we know how to tell a story anyhow. But I could tell a story with great comedy. It is the most believable story. And then I got saved, and God did this whole thing about putting the Holy Spirit in me so that then the truth shows up in my face, even if I'm kidding. You know, I'm trying to tell the story, and I'm trying to, you know, lead somebody, you know, pull a joke on them or whatever, and it doesn't matter. It always shows up in my face and my body language. I am a terrible liar. I just no point in me even doing it. It's one of the nice things that God did for me. I didn't think it was initially, but I've come to believe that. But in the way that Moses is handling this, it's coming through. Now, it doesn't talk about his body language or the look on his face or whatever, but it does come through in some of the things that he says to the people and how he responds to them. You know, so even though he knows that this is absolutely God, I mean, how much more proof do you need? You're standing in the tent of meeting and the Lord appears to you as a pillar, a cloud, and he's ordaining Joshua. He's handing things over. He's telling you this is the day that has come for you in which you are going to come and be with me. And instead of being joyful, oh, I'm going to be with the Lord, he's frustrated, he's disappointed, he's angry. He doesn't want these things to come to pass. Transitions are hard. But the question is, do we believe God? Do we trust him? Or maybe do we feel the need to air our concerns about what God is doing? Do we feel a sense of loss or disappointment? Instead, we lose our way and we don't trust God in those moments. You know, it's easy to trust God when everything is going your way, isn't it? I mean, when the things are happening the way we like them, when people are saying things, the things that we like, when the organizational things are happening in a way that we agree with or whatever. But what about when you know that it's God, but you don't like it? What about when God calls you into deep waters where you don't feel safe? What about when God calls you into difficult situations? What about when God calls you to lay down your life or to lay down something that you like or want or a situation in the way you think it ought to unfold? And God calls you to those things. You know, in this situation, it seems really clear. what God was doing. I mean, God has spoken directly to him. And yet Moses is kicking against that. He's resisting. He doesn't want it to come to pass. Imagine how odd that must have been, how difficult that must have been for Joshua in that moment. He's wanting to celebrate what God is doing in his own life. And yet at the same time, he's got to kind of, you know, pat Moses on the back and tell him it's okay. You know, God still loves you and things like that. And he can't even be excited even about what God is getting ready to do in his life because the other guy is taking it so hard. And good and bad times, do we trust God? Now, from that moment on, here's the thing, is that you read throughout commentaries, one of the things that they're saying is, what a great leader Moses was at this time, because in spite of all these things, he was, you know, casting the vision, he was saying these things. But I found it interesting that as the verses that they were referencing, I realized that in those verses, it was actually where the Lord was speaking to his people. It wasn't, yes, Moses was the mouthpiece, but it says very clearly that the Lord said these things and he spoke them through Moses. And the first thing he says to them is this, be strong and courageous. In fact, he says it repeatedly throughout the balance of the message. And each charge, as he gives the charge to the people, as he gives the charge to Moses, as he gives the charge to Joshua, in every instance, he begins it with this casting of this vision. Be strong and courageous. When we begin just with Moses, you know, it's not like Moses' fears were unwarranted. Remember that even while he was with them, oftentimes Israel did things that just really didn't make sense and they behaved badly. And so he's worried about what's going to happen, about how things can go wrong. I mean, and so he is justifiably concerned about what's going to happen when he leaves. How are they going to behave? And it's into this that God says, listen, it's not you who has to worry about that. That's my job. You probably know something about what that's like a little bit. Maybe you've decided not to take your vacation because if you go, then all the wheels will fall off everything at work. Or if you go to, you know, to sleep tonight, you know, things may not turn out the way they're supposed to. You're going to stay up and worry all night because that'll fix everything for certain. I'm sure of it. Or, you know, we think to ourselves that if we don't do this, if we don't control the situation, if we don't fix it, because clearly, well, you're God, right? Do we trust him? Will we be strong and courageous in the moment when God is doing things, even when we don't like the way that those things are working out or happening or whatever else? I can tell you that one of the most spiritual things you can do in your life sometimes is just to take a nap. Because nothing says, God, I believe you're in control, than to take your hands off the wheel, lay back and relax and trust in his presence and his power and his ability to work in that situation, even when you don't have your hands on the wheel, right? I mean, really, God can't handle it if you take your hands off the wheel for a moment. God can't handle your life, your situation, the world events or whatever else. I mean, surely you should probably stay up all night long and worry about the summit in Singapore or something, right? Because, I mean, by doing that, that will make everything. Oh, no? No, see, the reality is that one of the greatest statements of our faith is when things are not going the way we like or the things that we are having a hard time with or whatever else, that we believe that God is in the mix of it, that God is in control, and we trust him with our circumstances, with our situations, even in the things that we don't like. See, strength and courage are not the absence of fear. They are a response to it. One of my favorite John Wayne quotes is, courage is being scared to death, but saddling up anyway. In the book of Revelation, the Revelator speaks to those who will inherit the kingdom of God. And he's speaking to those who will inherit the kingdom of God, when he speaks to them about why they're going to receive the kingdom of God, he says, and to those who overcome, they shall inherit these things. In great contrast, he talks about those who will not inherit. And the list of abominable behaviors, he begins the list with the cowardly. There's is part of the second death. You see, in the midst of this, this whole idea of being strong and courageous is not in the face of everything going our way or everything being the way we like it. It's not in our comfort zones or anything else, but it's where God calls us out into the deep waters, where he calls us into the dangerous waters, where he calls us into the positions and situations in life where we say, God, I don't necessarily like it. I don't necessarily see how you're doing or whatever else, but I see your hand in it and I will go with you and I will trust you and I will believe you even when it's not going exactly the way that I want it to. The call to be bold and courageous is the call to engage, not just when it's convenient. You know, it's interesting that the psalmist paints this picture of this king who's standing before his army. He's in full army and he's strutting about like a rooster, it says, you know. And the psalmist actually mocks it. He's talking about that kind of false sense of boldness, that kind of false sense of courage, and paints it over against the picture of the call to be God's people in the face of difficulty and trial and difficult circumstances. Anybody can be like the banty rooster strutting across there when everything is going our way. But being courageous and bold in the face of adversity, trial, difficulty, circumstances I don't like. God says to Moses, he says to Joshua, he says to Israel three times, be bold and courageous, not because Moses is leading you. Be bold and courageous, not because Joshua is leading you. You be bold and courageous because I'm the one who's leading you. I think that might preach. What do you think? You think that God will that God can lead us, that we can be bold and courageous regardless of who is standing out in front? Do you think we can be bold and courageous whether Moses is leading or Joshua or Hal or anyone else? Because we have confidence that God is leading. Now, if God isn't leading, hear me really clearly. I don't mean you don't like it or it's not the way you want it to go or whatever. But if God isn't leading, I just tell you, man, with all of your might, run the other direction. Live to fight another day. If God's not leading. But God is leading. They're going into a situation where they're going to face battle in these new lands. They're facing all kinds of unknown circumstances and situations. They're going into a land that they know very little about. They've been told it's a land flowing with milk and honey. That sounds great. That's exciting. I mean, but isn't it true that every time you and I go into uncharted territory, and we go into new things, it's with the anticipation that good things will happen there, but with the reality that we don't know exactly what's going to happen, how it's going to unfold. And that invariably there will be tough trials and circumstances with every good venture that we go into. Everything that we press into where God is leading, there will be hardship and difficulty. There will be trial and difficult circumstances. But we believe that in the overall end of things, that God is working through those things. God is doing those things. And it's easy to look back over time and see how God has worked in those things. But when we're stepping into the unknown, he says, be bold and courageous. Because the real leader isn't Moses and the real leader isn't Joshua. The real leader is Yahweh. He's the one that I put my confidence in. That's what Israel had to do. And church, it's the same in every generation. For all of God's people, it's the same always. Is that when God speaks, sometimes he calls us into things that are inconvenient, that are hard, that are difficult. They are not always the things that we want or the way that we like them. But the question is do we trust God? And how do we determine when it's God? Is it really by nice smiles, by the flashbang? Is it by the new and shiny thing that we run to, believing that that must be the call or the move of God because it looks so intriguing to us? Can I just tell you, as a leader in the American church, one of the hardest parts about this is that every day I'm presented with dozens of new conferences and books, all telling me how we can run the church so that our ministry will be better, so that we can do more of the things of God, so we can grow and we can become all the flashbang and have the whole, you know, everything in the bag of chips. And but can I tell you, at the end of the day, that the most important thing I can do is listen to one voice and live my life for the applause of the one and only God. See, at the end of the day, I have to lay my head down, just like you do, and ask the Lord, is it well with me and you? I love the nights whenever I know that the Spirit of God just sends that sense of comfort and peace to me when I lay my head down and I know that I've been doing the things that God has called me to that day. Sometimes hard things, sometimes easy things, but there's nothing as sweet as the slumber that when I know that that's what I've done, regardless of what other cool thing I could have done or whiz-bang thing or great theory or whatever else, and when I know that at the end of the day that I've done what the Lord has called me to do. But I tell you, there's nothing more uncomfortable when the Lord calls me up, calls me my hand on how I've lived my life that day. I actually had it happen just a couple of weeks ago. I'd been out biking and I had an opportunity to meet a man and I was visiting with him and we were talking and I was really tired at this point. I'd biked a long way, ran a long way, and I wasn't in the mood. And God was clearly orchestrating this conversation. I had no intention of talking to this guy, and I ended up having this about a 30-minute conversation with him, and I could see God was all over it, you know, and everything in me said, hey, you know, you have an extra space on your bike rack today. You could load up his bike and you could take him home. He's, you know, it'd be a chance to talk to this guy and get to know him. And who knows, you know, God's doing something right here. But internally, all I could think was this. Ugh. I'm tired. I'm hungry. I really want something to drink right now. I really don't want to talk to anybody. And at the end of the conversation, I walked away and I got in my vehicle. And even as I was pulling away, all I could think about was the empty rack on my bike rack on the back behind me. And I knew I was wrong. I knew I was tired and I was hungry and I was cranky. So I drove home, stopped and got gas all the way home. Man, the Lord was just dealing with me. And the whole day went on like that, where just God was just going, you know, you really left that guy when he needed you to be my hands and feet. I did not want to hear that. It plagued me all the way into the evening. And so then I'm telling my wife the story about how I met this guy on the bike trail and everything. And what does she do? You know, not intentionally. She went, you know, she just kind of turned the screw, you know? I mean, she goes, oh, so did you give him a ride then? No, I didn't give him a ride. Well, did you pray about it? Oh. Yeah, I just, no, no. You know that. You've said those things right before. You know, when you have nothing to say because you know that you have nothing to say. In that moment, all I could just tell the Lord is, just, you know, God, if you bring this man back across my path, I will load his bike up. I will take every opportunity to minister to him. But I tell you what, I knew that night, I knew I hadn't listened. I knew I hadn't done what God wanted me to do in that moment. But here's the thing, is that every night when I lay my head down, that's the question I've got to ask. It's the question that you need to ask of yourself. But here's the thing, is that it will call you into places to do things that you do not want to do sometimes, and moments when you don't want to do them, and ways that you are scary to you at times. They will take you places. I guarantee you it will, that following God is not safe. That God himself is not safe. That if you've gotten this idea in your mind that God is a gentleman and he'll never call you into danger and that he'll never make your life difficult, that he'll never put you through hardship, that he'll never let you suffer, you don't know anything about God. I want to introduce you to the God of the Bible. He's the God who calls animals to speak at times into people's lives. He's the one who called the armies out into the out of their comfort zone and led them into the promised land to do battle. He's the one who led them through the slavery in Egypt. He's the one who called the apostles to speak things over people and to stand before kings and to put their lives constantly on the line. And so much so was the fire that burned in the early church that they had to get to 10,000 people before they needed committees to organize things. Because each night, as the people of God laid their heads down, they didn't say, did I do the things that a pastor asked for me? Did I do the things on the list I was supposed to do or whatever else? They were asking God to provoke them, to call them into places, into dangerous places, to call to him, to ask him to follow their lead. And so they had to get to 10,000 people before people had to start going, gee, do you think somebody needs a casserole? Really, do we have to have a Facebook page for people to get taken care of and loved on and ministered to? I mean, is that really what it's become? Really? See, here's the thing I know is that in the early church, those 12 apostles, as they led the church, that they infected 120 people with a message of who God was and what he was doing through Jesus Christ. And those 120 people infected 3,000 on that first day. And then that grew, it would be 10,000 people. And they literally had to get to that point where somebody went, hey, I think somebody's not getting taken care of. Because they were boldly and courageously following his lead. See, here's the thing I know is that in the American church, the measure of most everything is whether or not it's safe, right? I mean, that's how we determine whether we should go on a mission trip. It's whether we determine whether or not we should help somebody on the side of the road. It's when we determine whether or not to build relationships with people or to go places or to say things or whatever else. It's all about safety. I'm sure we can probably find that verse somewhere. Second Opinions, Third Geronimo. But the God of the Scripture is not safe. He calls us into dangerous places. And here's the thing. I know the moment I speak that and people step out in faith like that, that something's going to happen. I am certain that we will find ourselves in dangerous places and do unsafe things and that someone might get hurt. I'm certain of it. And here's what I know. That we can all stay safe and people will get hurt. They will perish without a knowledge of Jesus Christ. I know people are going to get hurt because you know what? Those things will happen in the world whether you're out there being the hands and feet of Jesus or not. See, that's what he was telling Moses, is what he was telling Joshua, that regardless of whatever you do, you know, bad stuff is going to happen. Hey, look, God is leading when Adam and Eve screwed everything up for all of us. Hello? God is leading Moses. God is leading when Joshua leads. And bad things happened among the people. Bad things happened to God's people. But yet I've yet to find that verse that says, but you decide how to live your life on based on what's safe or comfortable or whatever you like or the way you like it or whether or not you agree with God or whatever else. And you just kind of decide. No, he says, you be bold and you be courageous. And the definition of cowardice is not about being afraid. It's when we refuse to follow the leading of God. When we choose our own comfort and our own likes and dislikes over the leading of God. Following God is hard. It's not pop culture, it's not trends in church growth or the latest book and idea or whatever else. It really is about hearing his voice. And at the end of the day, whether you're a leader, or here's the thing I know, everybody leads somebody. Right? You have influence in people's lives. But look, leader or not, end of the day, when you lay your head down, does God have the right to speak into your heart, to speak into your day, and to either comfort you so that you lay your tired head down, your weary head down, and you rest well in the comfort that you know that you did his will today? Or does he have room to speak into your heart and to call you to your knees or into your closet or into the back room or wherever else he needs to do and do business with you until you are willing to come to a place where you say, God, given the opportunity, I will be bold and courageous again. I will choose what you're doing in my life rather than choosing my own comfort, my own safety, or anything else. I'll let you lead. I'll believe you. I will trust you. See, it's easy to say I trust you, God, when nothing is on the line. And that's what you and I need to do. We need to follow God. We need to be bold and courageous. And then if it's not him, by all means, run the other way. Let's stand together. Can I have band and prayer members? Go ahead and come on up. You know, as we've been going through this series, it was called Choose for a Reason because, you know, over and over again, we're just presented with choices. That where God is calling us to believe him, to trust him, to walk with him, to choose between life and death, good and evil, to choose to trust or to not trust. You know, all around us, the world gives us the message that every choice is really just an equal option. That every option is just there for us to decide. But the truth is that they are not all equal. That they are not all the same. And the call of God on our lives, on our church, is to live boldly and courageously. To live lives of faith. And the very nature of faith is to believe God in the things that we cannot see. To have courage and faith in the moments of the things that we don't always understand where God is leading or how it's all going to work out. How it's going to be paid for. How we're going to do those things ourselves. That he calls us to a vision that is so much bigger than our own ability to accomplish it. Bold and courageous means that we live lives that speak about Jesus' kingdom and his return. Not only in words, but in our actions and deeds. And so in the end, it really isn't about options. It's about doing what God has called us to do. To choose God or choose something else. But there is really no other option.